Welcome to HN Pod, your daily audio dive into the top stories and most fascinating discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today we are bringing you episode 437, and we are covering all the top stories from yesterday, June 24th, 2026. We have a really fantastic lineup for you today.
We really do. Today we are talking about a major shift in cloud pricing as BunnyDNS goes completely free. Then we will look at OpenAI unveiling its very first custom inference chip built with Broadcom.
We also have a hilarious, though mostly tragic, breakdown of what it actually takes to found a startup in Germany right now. Plus some incredible gaming history as John Carmack reflects on his biggest mistakes from the early days of building Quake at id Software.
And finally, we will wrap up with Ruby LLM, a unified framework for all major AI providers. And there's actually a really funny connection between that story and our German startup story that we'll get to later. Let us jump right into it.
Sounds good. So our first story today comes from the cloud infrastructure world. Bunny.net announced that they are making their BunnyDNS service completely free. They are removing all query fees, no per-request billing, and they are including free DNS hosting for up to 500 domains per account.
It's a massive move. They process nearly 200 billion queries a month, so eating that cost is no small thing. But their reasoning makes perfect business sense. They realize that DNS is the starting line for everything else an application does. If they want developers to use their content delivery network, their edge scripting, and their security products, charging for the basic routing engine just adds unnecessary friction.
Exactly. Once your DNS is with them, they have this one-click acceleration feature that spins up a pull zone and starts routing requests through their edge network instantly. And it's not a stripped-down free tier either. They are including smart records, health monitoring, and dual-stack IPv6 out of the box. You do still have to meet their platform-wide $1 a month minimum spend, but the DNS queries themselves are free.
The Hacker News comments took this as an opportunity to discuss the broader cloud ecosystem, particularly the state of European cloud providers. A user named Lucaso Otto pointed out how great it is to see a European company being so competitive, especially in light of the recent pricing drama with Hetzner.
Oh man, the Hetzner subthread was intense. For context, Hetzner is a hugely popular budget cloud provider, but they recently raised prices significantly. One commenter noted that adding a new small dedicated compute virtual machine in the US went from about 17 euros to almost 44 euros.
Right, and the community felt the communication around those hikes was really poor. One user mentioned they completely halted a massive infrastructure migration from DigitalOcean to Hetzner because the new pricing ruined their cost projections. It just goes to show how fragile trust can be in the cloud space. Bunny is basically doing the exact opposite here. By making a core piece of infrastructure free and predictable, they are buying a ton of developer goodwill.
Speaking of controlling your own infrastructure, let us move to our second story. OpenAI has officially unveiled its first custom chip, codenamed Jalapeno. It was designed and manufactured in collaboration with Broadcom, and it is specifically built for inference workloads.
We've been hearing rumors about OpenAI building their own silicon to escape the NVIDIA tax for a while now, but it's finally here. TechCrunch reported that the chip is already showing significantly better performance per watt than current alternatives, and they are targeting low operating costs for real-time models, like the ones powering their coding assistants.
What really caught the attention of the Hacker News crowd was a line in the press release claiming the chip went from design to production in just 9 months, and that they used OpenAI models to accelerate parts of the design process.
Naturally, the hardware engineers on Hacker News were highly skeptical of that marketing spin. A commenter who actually runs a chip company chimed in to clarify what that timeline likely means. They explained that if OpenAI means 9 months from RTL freeze, which is basically locking in the final logic code, to tape out, that's actually a fairly typical, maybe even slightly unimpressive timeline for a complex 3-nanometer chip.
But the context really matters here. Another user pointed out that OpenAI did not just spin up a rookie hardware team. Their head of hardware is Richard Ho, who previously led the Tensor Processing Unit, or TPU, effort at Google. And when Google built the TPU, they also partnered with Broadcom.
Exactly. Broadcom is a massive design house. OpenAI writes the logical behavior of the chip, and Broadcom handles the incredibly complex backend work to turn that code into a physical layout that a fab like TSMC can actually print. So while the AI-assisted design angle is great marketing, the real story is that OpenAI hired the exact right industry veterans who have run this exact playbook before.
It is all about vertical integration. Greg Brockman mentioned on their podcast that they were looking for specific workloads that are underserved. Training models requires massive clusters of NVIDIA GPUs, but inference happens every time a user hits enter. By controlling the chip architecture, the memory systems, and the scheduling, OpenAI is trying to optimize the exact layer where they are currently bleeding margin.
Well, if you think designing custom silicon is difficult, you should try starting a software company in Germany. Our third story is a blog post titled Founding a Company in Germany, 9,600 euros, 152 days, and I still cannot send an invoice. It was written by Carmine Paulino.
Sarah, wait, Carmine Paulino? Is not he the developer who built the Ruby framework we are talking about later in the show?
Yes, it is the exact same guy. We are covering his open source project, Ruby LLM, as our final story today. So the poor guy is out here writing amazing unified AI wrappers for the global developer community while simultaneously fighting the German government just to get permission to bill his clients.
That is incredible, and his blog post is just a wild ride of bureaucratic pain. He walks through a timeline starting in late January. Over 5 months he had to deal with law firms, notaries reading deeds aloud, register courts, and tax firms. He spent over 7,600 euros in fees, had to lock up 2,000 euros in untouched share capital, and as of late June, he still does not have the VAT ID required to legally invoice his international clients.
The most frustrating part of his story was the naming saga. He just wanted to name his company Plenty. The German register rejected it because it was a generic English word. They rejected Plenty Group and Plenty Labs with a space. Finally, out of pure spite, he submitted Plenty Labs as one single word, without a space, and they approved it. As he put it, the rule does not reward clarity, it rewards nonsense.
The Hacker News comments had a field day comparing the German system to the US and the UK. A big point of debate was the corporate structure he used. He set up a UG and Co. KG. He did this to avoid the standard German GmbH structure, which requires 25,000 euros sitting in a bank account just to exist.
That 25,000 euro requirement sparked a massive cultural debate in the comments. A user named Rob74 defended the German system, arguing that the capital requirement is there to ensure the company can cover initial liabilities and protect consumers.
But the American commenters were quick to contrast this with U.S. limited liability companies, which require zero upfront capital and can be spun up in an afternoon for a few hundred bucks. In the U.S., liability is handled on the back end. If you run an undercapitalized company and use it to charge debts, the courts will just pierce the corporate veil and go after your personal assets.
It really highlights a fundamental difference in philosophy. The U.S. system accepts a moderate rate of business failure and unpaid debts as the necessary cost of making entrepreneurship highly accessible. The German system tries to prevent bad actors on the front end by demanding cash and endless notary checks. But as Carmine pointed out, this friction mostly just scares away new founders, while massive scams like Wirecard still manage to slip through the cracks.
Moving from modern startup struggles to some legendary tech history, our fourth story is a Twitter thread from John Carmack. With the 30th anniversary of the game Quake happening, Carmack shared some of his biggest regrets from the early days of id Software.
It is always so refreshing to hear someone of Carmack's stature talk openly about his mistakes. His first regret was that Quake was overly ambitious technically. He thinks they should have built all the great multiplayer and modding features into a stable Doom++ engine first. Instead, they kept pulling the rug out from under the level designers while building a true 3D, 6 degrees of freedom engine from scratch.
He also admitted to pushing everyone way too hard. He said he did not appreciate that maturing companies need more slack, and running people at absolute startup intensity constantly will wear them out. He noted that Quake was the project where he finally had to accept his own personal limits, because he was working as hard as humanly possible and still missing his own deadlines.
But the part that really got Hacker News talking was his reflection on the design team. Carmack said they insisted that level designers also have strong visual aesthetics. John Romero had both skills, which set the company expectation early on. But as the technology provided a richer palette, it got much harder. This led to massive infighting, where the designers who could manage the visuals disparaged the ones who could not.
And he ended the post with a direct apology, saying, "Sorry, Sandy." He was referring to Sandy Peterson, one of the iconic designers on Doom and Quake. Sandy actually had a thread of his own called How Quake Ruined Id Software, which Carmack was responding to.
The Hacker News comments filled in a lot of the deep lore here. Users pointed out that Sandy Peterson has talked in various interviews about how toxic the environment got during Quake. While Sandy does not blame Carmack directly, there was a lot of friction with other team members, widely believed by the community to be Tim Willits, who ended up taking a lot of the credit for the design work.
It is a classic, almost tragic tale of a brilliant engineering team failing at people management. Carmack basically admits he lacked the awareness and experience to manage those interpersonal conflicts. They shipped a masterpiece that changed gaming forever, but it cost them their dream team. It is a great lesson for any technical founder that you can write the best engine in the world, but if you cannot manage the human element, your company will fracture.
Absolutely. All right, let us look at our final story for today. As we mentioned earlier, this is a show HN from Carmine Paulino for a project called Ruby LLM. It is a framework that aims to provide one beautiful Ruby interface for all major AI providers.
If you are building AI features into an app right now, you know the absolute pain of dealing with a dozen different SDKs. OpenAI has their format, Anthropic does things slightly differently, Google Gemini is its own thing, and local models via a Llama are another beast entirely. Ruby LLM abstracts all of that away. You just change the model name string, and the framework handles the underlying API differences.
It is built very much in the spirit of Ruby on Rails. It has Active Record integration, so you can run a simple generator command and instantly start saving your AI chats directly to your database. It also handles tool calling, structured JSON schemas, image generation, and audio transcription, all with a really clean, chainable syntax.
The feedback on Hacker News was generally very positive, but with some constructive criticism from early adopters. A user named Crush mentioned they had been using it for 6 months and liked the developer experience, but found the maintainer a bit unresponsive to pull requests. They noted that some AI-generated code was being merged over community fixes.
Another user echoed that, saying they struggled with the Rails integration early on and eventually just wrote their own adapter. They made a fair point that the fast pace of AI development makes life really tough for third-party wrappers. If OpenAI drops a massive new feature, you're stuck waiting for the library maintainer to support it before you can use it.
But Carmine actually jumped into the Hacker News comments to address this directly. He explained that version 1 of Ruby LLM assumed a strict one-to-one mapping between a provider and a protocol, but now that OpenAI has multiple protocols and Vertex AI supports various models, that assumption broke down.
Right, so he announced he is doing a major refactor for version 2.0 to split protocols from providers. He also confirmed that the much-requested Responses API is natively supported in the upcoming release. It is a perfect example of the open-source lifecycle. Someone builds a highly useful abstraction, the underlying technology shifts under their feet, and they have to re-architect to keep up.
And as one commenter pointed out, the portability this gives you is huge. As AI usage scales, API costs become a massive line item. Having a tool that lets you seamlessly swap from an expensive Anthropic model to a cheaper DeepSeek model for certain tasks without rewriting your application logic is incredibly valuable.
It really is. Well, that is all the time we have for today on episode 437. From the hidden costs of cloud DNS and the sheer pain of German bureaucracy to custom AI silicon and the human cost of shipping legendary video games, it has been a packed show.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to read any of the articles or dive into the comment threads we discussed, you can find them on the front page of Hacker News from yesterday, June 24th, 2026.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from the tech world. Until then, keep building and keep hacking.